fucking knife.
You were having a boogie down production over there. You were chair dancing.
Sometimes I get excited by the theme music.
I guess so. Welcome to Linoleum Knife, a podcast of the cinema.
A podcast, yeah.
What, is that your line? Am I stepping on something?
So I got a message. Mm-hmm. Well, you got a message.
Uh-huh.
From two family members who shall remain nameless. But their initials are Guillermo and Susan.
They have my back. My family has my back.
Who have decided on your behalf to get on Team U.
And well, they should.
They say that they were listening to a recent episode.
Uh-huh.
And that they both agree that I am dominating
you. Mm-hmm.
Fine.
Mr. Man.
Fine. I see now.
What? What do you see?
Betrayed by my own family.
Because
blood is thicker.
Maybe everyone else isn't crazy. Maybe it's just you. You're Dave White, film critic for movies.com, by the way.
No, it's just, I thought I was going to say podcast of the cinema, and then you said it, and then I was like, no, it doesn't matter. It's not my line.
Fair enough.
It should be.
And I'm Alonzo Duraldi.
I invented it.
You did. I'm Alonzo Duraldi.
Just want that known.
Film reviews editor of The Wrap, and film critic for What the Flick, and author of Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas, because this is the time of year where we drum that into your heads, because...
Yeah.
You ought to be buying a copy from us.
Let's talk at the end about all the things that listeners need to do.
Well, you tip them off now and they'll just stop buying. They'll quit out early.
No. They'll stay.
All right.
They'll stay because they want to know all the golden words that come from our mouths.
Because we have so many things to offer, including our just hot off the presses completed commentary for the 1959 Santa Claus.
Yeah. Also things to give away.
Mm-hmm.
We're giving away things.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So yeah, you have to stay for that because there's free things happening.
Stuff at the end. We're going to give them away. Because there's not a lot of movies to talk about today.
No, it's a light week.
There are, in fact, two. One of them theatrical and one of them a television film.
Yes. Everybody got the heck out of the way of Hunger Games. So that was kind of the only big movie this week. I could talk about... Happy Valley real quick. Just to acknowledge that it exists.
All right. Why don't you begin with that one then?
Okay, sure. Happy Valley is a documentary about the Penn State child molestation scandal for the holidays.
Yeah, that's what I say. Good release time.
Yeah, when families are getting together for awkward times. I saw it at Sundance this year, and it's well done. And it is.
Oh, so it's been around for a while.
Yeah, it premiered at Sundance. It's just now opening theatrically. Yeah,
released.
I guess they were waiting for football season. I don't know.
Oscar season.
Well, that too.
Yeah.
It takes a story that you think you've heard all the sides of and delves into some other areas of it and really kind of looks at the larger issues of how it affected the community and what role does football play in our culture and at what point do we stop forgiving people whose work we like in one area because of their activities in another, you know, be it Bill Cosby or Roman Polanski or whoever, you know. It's a provocative film. People should see it. There.
unless I hear that it's one of the best documentaries of the year. I don't know that I'm going to rush out.
No, I know.
Eventually it's going to be on cable.
Of course.
It'll stream.
Sure.
Somewhere eventually.
It's been a strong year for documentaries.
I'll probably watch it just because I'm interested in how these things
it might be in my like
worked out.
It might be in my top 10, but I haven't seen as many docs as you this year, so who knows.
You haven't seen the best one. The two best ones.
The Last of the Unjust.
The Last of the Unjust.
I've seen The Last of the Unjust.
And National Gallery. You haven't seen those two.
I will try to see National Gallery this week if I have time.
Now, The Last of the Unjust is on DVD.
Yes.
So, you know, you could.
Mm-hmm.
It's only 3 hours and 45 minutes
long. Oh, you're right. And I got nothing but time right now, so...
Do you have time for the important films? Or do you just want to fritter away your days?
Fritter.
That's what I figured.
If I could fritter with a fritter.
It's funny you bring that up.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you bought me the latest issue of Martha Stewart Living because it's the Christmas issue.
Heck yeah.
The entire year goes by, and if I pick up an issue of a home magazine, recipes and stuff, you're just sort of like, sure, whatever, what's in it for me? Oh, dinner? Okay, fine. Christmas rolls around, and if there is a magazine out there with a tree on it, or a candy cane, boom, it is delivered unto me on this day.
I liked reading those, too.
The new Martha Stewart one has a recipe for homemade apple fritters.
Ooh.
I thought that might...
You know what I had once?
I thought that might excite you.
You know what I had once at like a Caribbean restaurant that was really good? Hmm. Conch fritters.
I don't know what that is.
Well, you know what conch is, right?
No.
Conch.
Okay.
You know the big shell?
Yeah, what's in that?
Well, it's a shell with a thing inside it, and the thing inside it is a conch. It's a...
But what is it?
It's a mollusk. I don't know. You know, like the way you would eat, you know, mussels or clams or whatever.
And you make a fritter
out
of it?
You make fritters out of it,
This doesn't sound as good as an apple fritter.
Well, it's different. It's savory, obviously.
No powdered sugar.
No.
On it.
Maybe if you made a conch fritter monsieur or something.
The fritter you're discussing seems less enjoyable to me than the fritter that I was talking about.
They all bring something to the table of coming into my mouth.
They don't all bring powdered sugar to the table.
Well, that's true. You're right.
Of course I'm right. Once again, I've dominated you.
Get in that kitchen to make me a conch fritter.
I'm going to get in that kitchen to make you an apple fritter, though.
Okay.
Like, I mean, not right now.
No.
Because
we're doing a show.
We're doing a podcast of the cinema.
We are.
Yeah. But, I just turned down my volume, shouldn't I? Yeah. So, sorry.
Sorry. That just happened during our commentary, too.
Yeah.
Did we leave it in? Yes.
Yes, we did. Okay, so, boom, Hunger Games.
Yes. Mockingjay Part 1, which I
liked it.
I did, too, and I'm surprised at how many people are kind of pitching a fit about the fact that, yes, it is a sequel, it is a threequel, rather, that has been torn into two pieces. Like, that's the thing now. That's the paradigm. That's the standard. That's what people are doing because Harry Potter, the last book was so ginormous they had to make two movies out of it. And somebody's like, oh, hey, there's fans that will pay to see to see us end this story twice. So let's do it. But even given the cynical mathematics involved, I thought that on its own, this was an entertaining movie.
Yes.
Oh, come on.
Here's my problem.
Uh-huh.
By the time a film like Mockingjay hits theaters.
Right.
And Rotten Tomatoes post has all the reviews aggregated.
Mm-hmm.
And there are, you know, 400 of them.
Right.
Whereas, you know, you look at a small film.
The National Gallery page has, what, 6?
7 or 8. You know what I mean? And I think to myself, what does it actually matter if I dig in deep to this? As entertaining as I find the Hunger Games films, and as good an example of YA adaptation as they are.
Yeah.
They are, in fact, so well adapted, I believe, that you don't even have to think of them as YA based.
No.
I know that I don't. I forget. I have such a good time at the Hunger Games films that I forget that's where it came from.
Yeah.
Because the others seem to be playing by this, you know, really rigidly defined playbook.
There's a formula for sure, yeah.
And I'm tired of it, I believe. I was quoted on Twitter by Ms. Madeline Brand the other day as on her show as saying, I wish a real dystopia would happen so that we no longer have to see movies about them.
Yeah, I mean, seeing the Hunger Games movies reminds me again how much I really hated Divergent. Well, yeah. And how little I am looking forward to the next three or four, however many chapters of that.
There'll be four. Right. There will be at least four.
Yeah.
So, but here's the thing, is that, yes, I found this film very entertaining. Well made, well acted. I really like Jennifer Lawrence. I think she's a great Katniss. Mm-hmm. We've got a crackly noise going on here.
I don't know what that's about.
I like that her performance seems to be, from start to finish, entirely trauma-based.
Well, yeah.
Everything about her life is a nonstop assault on her soul.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that. I appreciate what she gives in these films. I like how weirdly ambivalent this one is about the good guys.
Mm-hmm. And their motives.
Who are seemingly setting themselves up to be the next bad guys if they get their way. I mean, it's a weird sort of scenario that they've got, you know, cooked up in this bunker down there that they've rescued her from the capital to come be in.
Right. Well, the thing is, this movie, I think, has interesting things to say about politics.
Yeah.
You know, about what happens when the revolutionaries overthrow, you know, the dictators. Do they in turn become, you know, meet the new boss, same as the old boss, you know? The way that this movie addresses the notion of political propaganda, and is it any better or worse or different than the sort of bread and circuses razzle-dazzle of the Hunger Games in terms of molding the, you know, opinion of the public and the downtrodden?
Yeah.
You know, this movie was co-written by Danny Strong, who we always remember as Paris's boyfriend on Gilmore Girls, but yes, who has gone on to become a really successful screenwriter. And he wrote the HBO movies Recount and Game Change, and he wrote Lee Daniels' The Butler. And mm-hmm. I think he is good at a sort of kind of populist politics and taking, you know, big amorphous ideas and kind of boiling them down into audience-friendly nuggets. And I think that's kind of what he does here, you know. And which is a weird... I think the Hunger Games movies have more on their mind than a lot of these other YA movies. And that's probably why it makes them more interesting.
I think what's got me sort of just like, about it today is that this isn't a conversation you and I would be having this afternoon mm-hmm. if we weren't recording this podcast.
No, true. We'd see the movie and we'd be done with it.
Right. And often, one of the reasons I love doing this podcast with you, from the early days of having been forced into it, where I was sort of resistant every step of the way, and now I'm into it,
mm-hmm.
is that this is just us turning on the microphone while we're having a talk about movies.
Right.
We would be having this conversation even if the microphone weren't on, generally,
mm-hmm.
until it gets to something like this, where the culture is so inundated by coverage of it and right. opinions about it. Anything we say after the
office coverage.
Yeah, anything we say after the fact feels redundant.
Yeah.
Feels like just a pss, you know, into the wind. And
like it's requisite.
And not interesting anymore. Furthermore, I worry that the political message of this film and the first two
mm-hmm.
is sort of drowned out by the spectacle of it all and by the box office of it all and by the popularity. Like, the narrative of this series is, isn't the Hunger Games great? Isn't Jennifer Lawrence cool? It's not, aren't these films holding up a mirror to how ugly things are in the world right now? No one ever talks about that. If they do, it's a film critic putting it into a review. The public's not talking about
that. Okay, but what if these films are actually doing what these films are about? What if they are subtly sort of massaging people's, you know, mentality about things? Maybe they look at Fox News and they think about, you know, Stanley Tucci's teeth.
Right.
You know, maybe it's subtly nudging people in a direction of maybe questioning certain things about the power structure and classism and things like that. I mean, I'm not going to fault a movie for having ideas, even if those ideas are kind of drowned in the hype of
I'm not faulting the movie for having ideas.
No, I know. I'm not saying you are. But I'm just saying I would rather see a movie that puts forth some cool ideas, even if those cool ideas aren't being received, than not bother at all. And I mean, you would too, obviously. That's not like a controversial statement. But I'm just saying, you know, but it's not the movie's fault if people are into it for the wrong reasons or for reasons that have nothing to do with what they're really about.
No.
But, you know, ideally it sneaks up on people and maybe they don't even consciously consider it. But, you know, that's what propaganda does. It doesn't clobber you on the head. It just sort of insinuates itself into your ways of thinking and how you see the world, you know.
Thanks. I can think of a film I'd like to discuss even less than Hunger Games, and that's Gigi.
I grant you there are problematic...
Do you?
Yes.
Do you grant me that there are problems with Gigi?
Well,
this film back in the day.
Not problems in how it's...
You dragged me to see it one day at the Cinematheque.
Not problems in its creation, but just in
they
terms
missed
of
a reel.
It's sexual politics.
In the middle of it all, and then showed us the reel out of order. Just a dismal viewing experience, and B, what a rotten movie.
Oh, it is not.
Yeah, it is.
It's, look, it is, the story is not,
young girl sold like a cow.
I understand, it's the sexual politics of this movie are really anachronistic.
So gross.
But the songs are great.
I don't want to hear the songs. I don't want to hear the Thank Heaven for Little Girl song is the grossest song.
But The Night They Invented Champagne.
Fine. I'll give you The Night They Invented Champagne. Just never make me go near it again.
You don't have to. You saw it once with me, and I appreciate it, and you don't have to watch Gigi anymore.
Grumpy Cat's Worst Christmas Ever.
Now, that's a movie we'd be talking about.
Is coming soon to Lifetime.
Yeah, premieres on November 29th.
That would be like a week from last night.
This coming Saturday, if you're listening to the show when it's new. And it will be out on DVD in mid-December.
Very soon. Aubrey Plaza is the voice of Grumpy Cat. Yes. This is a live-action film.
Yes, let's be clear about that.
Grumpy Cat does not digitally move her mouth.
Nope.
Grumpy Cat is a girl, by the way. Mm-hmm. Always has been a girl. The real Grumpy Cat is female. She seems to be something like a little dwarf cat.
Apparently
she
so.
She has tiny little legs. And you get to see a little more of her body.
Yeah.
She's doing a lot of lying down.
She does a lot of lying down. She gets held occasionally. Yeah. There are moments when you can tell they're using either a stunt kitty or just a stuffed animal.
Oh, there's a moment when they're using a literal stuffed animal. And you can tell.
Throw it or something. Yeah. But it's a Lifetime movie, and it is very self-consciously a Lifetime movie. There are a lot of jokes
maybe
in it.
More than any other Lifetime movie has ever been.
Has
a Lifetime movie ever been like this?
This is probably the first sort of self-aware meta Lifetime movie where they make constant references to Lifetime, to it being a Lifetime movie, to other Lifetime movies.
Yes.
It's
cheap. It's dumb.
Yeah.
It is essentially the plot of That Darn Cat.
Basically.
And
yet,
they gotta save the pet shop
from foreclosure.
Christmas foreclosure.
By foiling the kidnapping of $1 million dog.
Mm-hmm. Not exactly the plot of That Darn Cat.
It would have been great if it were
plenty of similarities.
If it were $1 million duck.
Yes. And Bibbs came over, and we all sat down and watched it. And at first, all three of us were a little, you know,
hesitant,
apprehensive about what we were getting. And then we all started laughing, and we kept laughing. It's pretty funny.
It's mainly on Aubrey Plaza's shoulders.
Yes.
To keep it funny.
It's entirely on her
shoulders. Yeah, I mean, there are some other funny stuff. The heavy metal dudes are kind of funny, and Daniel Roebuck as the bumbling security guard has some moments, but it's mostly about Aubrey Plaza's exceedingly wry and grumpy voiceover as the cat. Yeah, it's, you know, it may be just the soft bigotry of low expectations, but I was amused and entertained, you know, the whole time. And there are a lot of laugh out loud moments.
I really want to. Well, we've got it in TiVo, right?
Yes.
I want to watch the last chunk again because there's a joke near the end that was on the
screener,
DVD that we were sent.
You don't think it's going to make it to air?
It blows my mind to think that it might make it to air. Because this is a film that families are going to watch together.
Mm.
And it's a joke that will go over the heads of kids.
Right.
But that parents will hear and go, oh, my.
But it's a funny joke.
It's a funny joke. It's a very funny joke. And the way she sells it is very funny.
Yeah.
But it's...
it's risque.
Adults. Yeah. So anyway... yeah, watch it. What else you got going on this weekend? Nothing. You're going to be eating a bunch of food, lolling around. Watch Grumpy Cat's Worst Christmas Ever.
In a tryptophan haze.
Yeah. Which is a myth, by the way.
I was going to say, we're going to point that out. Tryptophan, it's a myth. The reason you get sleepy after Christmas dinner is because you've loaded up on carbs and booze.
Right.
That's it? Really?
That's it. Those are the movies.
Wow.
We're too bored to talk about Hunger Games.
Yeah.
And Grumpy Cat doesn't merit a whole lot of discussion.
No. I will say...
The pedophilia documentary is not exactly
holiday friendly.
Fun times. Yeah.
One of my favorite aspects of the new Hunger Games movie, because we have not read the books.
Never will.
But somebody was saying, well, you know, Effie's not even in this part of the story. And I thought, well, she was one of my favorite things in the movie, because the idea of... the wildly, outrageously dressed and coiffed Effie Trinket having to live in this military bunker in, like, jumpsuits. And at first she's all, like, gray and tied down. But as the movie proceeds, like, the outfits are still gray, but she has cut them up and sewn them in these ways. And it's like when those prison drag queens that, like, you know, they expose the midriff and they'll take a jumpsuit and turn it into, you know, something crazy.
So she's not in the books? After this...
He's not in this first chunk of Mockingjay, no.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So this is all a construction for the film.
Yeah.
Let's just keep her in it for comic relief.
Basically, yeah.
It was a good idea, because really... she was a bright spot.
Absolutely.
Like, through the whole movie. Yeah. Everything she did...
good call, Mockingjay.
As that character, yeah. Yeah.
All right. DVD...
got a bunch of letters. Oh, it'll do DVDs. The DVD record. Yeah, yeah. Tell them what you...
I have two. One is...
That's cheating.
Well, I know, but I'm going to do it anyway. One is sort of goofy and one is, you know, for the cineasts, or maybe they're both for the cineasts. I don't know. Shout Factory is putting out the, just in time for Thanksgiving, the Mystery Science Theater 3000 Turkey Day Collection. Yay. So this is the perfect thing to be while you're sitting around eating food. It's got four movies. It's got, Jungle Goddess, The Painted Hills, The Screaming Skull, and Squirm. All of which are great. And then it's got a bunch of information about all the different Turkey Day things they did over the years, and the bumpers and the host segments and all that stuff. Why are we cracking?
I don't know. We're getting a lot of weird noises.
Anyway, it's I've always been a big fan of Turkey Day. And in fact, if you look online, Joel Hodgson is hosting a new Turkey Day MST Marathon online this year. If you Google... Turkey Day 2014. I'm sure you'll find the site. I don't have it in front of me. And then my other DVD pick this week from Criterion is the box set Les Blank, Always for Pleasure, a collection of 14 documentaries from the legendary American filmmaker that have all been remastered and re-everythinged. It includes The Blues According...
I like it when they re-everything.
Yeah, I'm all about re-everythinging. It includes The Blues According to Lightnin' Hopkins, Garlic is as Good as 10 Mothers, In Heaven There is No Beer, Gap-Toothed Women. Yeah, a whole bunch of people. If you don't know Les Blank's work, or you only know Burden of Dreams... he is one of the great sort of kind of Americana documentaries and does really fascinating films on topics that you might not think would merit an entire film. And believe me, Garlic is as Good as 10 Mothers. Garlic is a fascinating subject for a movie in the hands of Les Blank. You want to see this stuff. What do you got?
Philippe Garrel's Jealousy is out on DVD.
Is that the one? Is his son in that one?
His son is in more than this one. His son is Louis Garrel, is often in his films.
Who American audiences best know from, what's that Bertolucci movie? With Michael Pitt.
What was it called?
The
The somethings.
Somethings.
Talk about this. I'll look it up.
This film came out earlier this year in the summer. It's, you know what I think it is? I think it's your iPad.
I don't think it's that. No, because it was
far. Okay. It's shot in black and white. It's really beautiful. Black and white by the cinematographer Willie Courant, who shot Masculine Feminine for Godard.
Oh, wow.
And
is still alive.
And is still alive. And Under the Son of Satan, the other film based on Bernanos' novel. This is about a guy, Louis Garrel, who leaves his wife and his daughter to go off and live with his girlfriend. And he's an actor, and so is the girlfriend. And he's trying to get her big break. But they're really poor, and they go over the idea of,
the dreamers.
What should we do with our lives? Should we devote ourselves to this art where we make no money and we're always miserable? or should we just do something to make some money and forget about being artists? And then she cheats on him, leaves him.
Well.
Yeah. And that's the framework, and it's a very sort of, sparse framework. Mm-hmm. Because really it's a film where these people are having sort of conversations about their lives and what their relationships are like and how things shift and change very subtly. And
okay.
Sometimes it's funny, and sometimes it's just really sort of painfully unhappy. And it's terrific. It's really good.
Okay.
And really thoughtful and just a quiet, quietly observant film about human relationships.
Hmm.
And also very short. It is 77 minutes long.
Wow, that's even shorter than Kirk Cameron Saving Christmas.
But it's compact. And there's a lot more going on in it than Kirk Cameron Saving Christmas.
I would hope so. All right, cool. Jealousy.
Yeah, you should be seeing that one.
We are going to catch up on letters since we had so few movies this week.
We have a few. You want to start with the top tens?
Sure,
let's start with the top tens, because we've been...
remiss.
Yeah, we haven't been doing your top tens very much lately. Dear Alonzo and Dave, since there has been a rise of Christian movies as of late, I thought I'd share a list of my favorite movies that really show Christian love. COG.
Okay.
Based on essays by David... based on one essay by David Sedaris. In this movie, a 20-year-old Yale dropout moves to Oregon.
In a theater.
In a theater. To pick apples with the common people. He also discovers that Christians have love in their hearts, and it kind of stays there. Saved.
Mm.
With Mandy Moore.
I am filled with Christ love.
Macaulay Culkin. He says, forgiveness is Jesus' thing, and his followers are another story. Carrie.
No, okay.
This is the film where Piper Laurie's Christian-based character shows us that overuse of the rod can also spoil the child. Jesus Camp.
Wow.
He says, a loving testimony of Christian love in action on credulous adults and their susceptible wards.
Oof.
I'm not sure what he's talking about here.
I'm not sure either.
Jesus Camp was a terrifying film. Red State. Kevin Smith shows us a family that knows how to love thy neighbor.
I think there's a level of sarcasm at work here. Just a hunch.
I don't know. Maybe. And oh, wait, I've got no name on this letter. What? I got the...
Dave White.
Oh, my. I'm an idiot. Sorry, letter writer. I know that you are out there.
Do I need to pause so you can...
Yeah, pause so I can go hunt down the letter name. All right, I dug it up. It's from Matthew Ross.
Okay.
Sorry. Hello, I've been listening to you two since the very beginning. Love the show. This is my first time sending an email. I figured since the podcast is predominantly about discussing new films, I would send in my top 10 of this year.
Okay.
Fine.
It's not over yet, but we'll take it.
So this is from Patrick.
Okay.
And here are his top 10 films of 2014 so far. Birdman.
Sure.
Which I liked.
Yeah.
Maps to the Stars, which I have not yet seen.
Yeah, and which apparently is not going
to... Someone's been to a film festival.
Yeah, or lives in Canada, because it's not opening here until after the New Year, apparently.
Listen Up, Philip, which I also have not yet seen.
I like that.
20,000 Days on Earth, which I have also not yet
seen. I have not seen.
The
I hear
Nick
it's
Nick Cave
documentary.
A Most Wanted Man, which is really good.
Yes.
Life Itself, which I liked quite a bit. Frank, which I still have not seen, but they just sent us a screener. Just,
okay,
it's in the stack on the TV.
I did not care for it.
Really?
Really.
Well,
yeah,
you can take it up with Patrick.
I suspect you will like it more than I did.
Obvious Child.
Yeah.
Only Lovers Left Alive.
Sure.
Which I dig a lot. Venus and Fur, which one is that?
The Polanski one.
I never saw it.
Oh, I didn't care for that one either.
I kind of blew it off. I didn't get, a sort of consensus of, praise. And so I don't have time.
I didn't love it. Although, if you want to see Matthew Amalric made to look exactly like Roman Polanski, it's kind of funny.
How do we grade this year's film? We haven't seen about four of these movies.
Yeah.
You're 100%.
Well, hang on. No, I'm
100% knife.
Stop. Wait. I'm taking off for Venus.
You get all the knives.
Venus and Fur, and there was another one that I... Oh, and Frank. So you're 90% knife.
All right. Oh, and the five Christian films.
Oh, well, those are 100%.
I guess. I mean, they're good.
They're good movies.
Sure.
I wouldn't necessarily hold them up as... I think he was kidding.
Give you your knife rating. 100%. It was 100. You're all 90 for Patrick.
Yes.
But we don't know, really, because we haven't seen some of
them. Well, yes, you're right. But we're giving you better than other ones we haven't
seen.
You
could be wrong about Frank.
But and maybe we wouldn't like 20,000 Days on Earth or whatever the other one we haven't seen yet.
When I see Frank, then we'll get frank about Frank.
Because Frank is the best Frank that's ever happened to me.
Dear David Alonso, Johnny Junko Guts is here.
Oh, hoo-ah. Well, I've never met. I know you've hung out with him and done his...
He is quite a dude.
Kapow TV or whatever that was called.
K-Chung.
K-Chung.
Kapow. K-Chung.
I knew it sounded like a Batman sound effect.
K-Chung Radio in Chinatown, Los Angeles.
Okay. What does Mr. Jungle Guts have to say?
Yes. I was a guest.
I know.
And I...
You discussed your critical practice. Yes,
I did.
I remember. And you need a lot of practice.
I have a critical practice. Because I'm an artist.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny Jungle Guts here with my list of my 10 favorite movies for your approval. I also have a movie theater tale included below.
Well... Twofer.
When my mom was in college, she went to go see a movie. What movie it was, she doesn't now remember, though I think she did know when she first told me the story. Anyway, she was watching the movie in the theater and the sound cut out. The film was still playing, but with no sound. After a minute or two of no sound and people whispering, a man stood up and announced, "I've seen this before." He then walked to the front of the theater, and standing next to the screen, he began describing to the audience everything that was happening in the now silent movie. This apparently continued for about 45 minutes until my mom grew tired of it and left.
That's like that year at Outfest when we had the Israeli film that came to us and had no subtitles on it.
Right.
Luckily, one guy spoke Hebrew, so he sat in the front row and we gave him a microphone and he live translated the whole thing.
So here's his list.
Okay.
And little descriptions after the film. The Holy Mountain.
Have never seen it.
Because I'm one of those people who's a little sad that he's in the cult around this movie and only wishes he liked El Topo better. The Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans. Okay. Because I saw this movie with no expectations, and it was the most fun that I will ever have in a movie theater in my life. I'm in agreement with you on that one, Mr. Jungle Guts.
And if you're a fan of Werner Herzog,
yes.
He does make an interesting appearance in Penguins of Madagascar.
Yes, yes, he does. We'll talk about that next week.
Yes.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Hmm.
Because it was almost impossible to make and still feels effortless.
Hmm.
Behind the Candelabra.
Oh, yeah.
Because of plastic surgery, amazing interiors, and a bunch of Hollywood actors doing things you'd never expect them to do. Hans Christian Andersen's The Little Mermaid.
Don't know that one. I mean, don't know what version we're talking about.
This is a 1975 Japanese animated version.
Oh, wow.
Of The Little Mermaid. Made by Toei, which I received on VHS for Christmas when I was 6.
That you were six when there were VHSs.
He's young. He's in his 20s.
Clearly.
Yeah. This Little Mermaid has long hair instead of a bra. And the occasional nipple really does add to this version's edge. Princess Marina lives in an undersea kingdom where the sun is a giant glowing pearl that rests on a cliff. Besides that, it has really great everything, especially great music and sound effects, and it tragically ends the way Anderson wrote it. I don't know what the ending is, the original tragic ending.
Give it, if it's a Hans Christian Andersen story, not well.
Right. The Wrestler.
Okay.
Because I'm from New Jersey. The Warriors. Mm. Because the Warriors are great. Real great. The best. Three, Nausicaa. Oh, okay. The Valley of the Wind, because I'm an environmentalist who hopes that he would never choose violence. Derek Jarman's Sebastian.
Oh, yeah.
Because the doors are open. And number one, Dumbo, because anything that I could write here wouldn't do justice to this glimmering ray of hope.
It's quite a list.
100% Johnny Jungle Guts.
Sure, yeah.
Much like you. Your latest episode is possibly one of the best ever episodes of Linoleum Knife for the following reasons.
Oh, wow.
A.
This must be the Rachel episode.
A. Dave being described as dominating, while Alonzo revels in making him squirm. B. Alonzo's reaction to Bill Murray's performance in St. Vincent. C. Another awesome Christian movie review left behind. You both get so animated when discussing them, it makes me wish someone bothered to release them in the UK so I could see how awful they are.
Oh, this isn't the Rachel episode. Okay.
D. Your ruthless takedown of every Nicholas Sparks film ever, and with good reason, too, though I still want to see Ghost Wife at some point. If I search for that title on Netflix, will I find it? I hope so. E. Alonzo swearing accidentally about being called Alfonso, promising to edit it out, and then evidently forgetting to do so.
Not really swearing, though.
Kinda. Another fabulous recap of all Dave White's alter egos during the letter reading. Once again, the bar is set. Long may the knife keep slicing through that linoleum and providing us with your reviews of awesomeness. All the best, James. P.S. Thanks, chaps. I will try and ship you another batch of chocolate stuff.
Yay!
Yeah. We like that.
That's why James is one of our favorite listeners.
Yeah. Gifts. You too could be one of our favorite listeners. If you are sending us treats. Regarding the Sub-Zeros.
For those of you who missed last week, Dave's favorite characters in... Kirk Cameron Saving Christmas were the giant twin Sub-Zero refrigerators in the kitchen of the McMansion where the movie was filmed, which may or may not be Kirk's McMansion.
But it probably is.
Just a hunch.
I remember many podcasts ago when you talked about how a particular movie plot was driven by the fact that the female lead did not have health insurance, yet she did have a Sarandon womb chair and matching ottoman in her apartment, which costs exactly what you figured she'd be paying if she was to purchase health insurance. This made me want to tell you that because I am Canadian and I don't need to pay for health insurance, I am able to have just one Sub-Zero fridge in my kitchen without bankrupting myself.
Oh, Canada.
You don't need to go visit horrid Kirk Cameron to play with high-end kitchen appliances if you're willing to come to Canada instead. It's cold here. You'd like it. I also have a Wolf stove. Nice. Should you wish to cook pancakes. And a womb chair, but it's a knockoff. Because even with a social safety net, those are effing expensive. Jennifer in Canada.
Wow.
I'm coming to your house, Jennifer in Canada.
That's a heck of an offer.
I mean, I still want to go to Kirk's house. Because I think we'd really bro it up. I think we would. Look, I've seen...
He could witness to you as a homosexual.
Did you see what... You saw what Everything Is Terrible did. They chopped up his How to Talk to a Homosexual...
Yes. About Jesus.
About Jesus video. It's a long video.
Yeah.
But they chopped it into like a 3-minute thing where he just says... it's stuff he says in the video. But
I'm sure it was all ridiculous.
It's all ridiculous no matter how you slice it, but they've condensed it into this wacky...
Concentrated burst of stupid...
This is from Tom. Mm-hmm. It is one sentence. I now cannot say how are you to people without repeating it three times in different intonations.
That was Ms. Rachel True explaining how you play the black best friend in movies. How are you? How are you? How are you? I don't know what the third one would be.
And Mike Friedman would like to tell you, Alonzo, that on this week's podcast where you discussed the Kirk Cameron Christmas movie, that you said that slaves built the pyramids in Egypt.
Oh, right, because you were talking about the National Gallery having been built on the backs of slaves. I jokingly said, like the pyramids. Am I incorrect in that?
Slaves did not.
Oh, okay then.
It is generally accepted by historians now that the pyramids were not built by slaves, but by workers who were paid, often in beer. Brewing beer was a good way to store grain, and it wasn't potentially infectious because it contains alcohol.
So, like when you get your college roommates to help you move into your first apartment.
Yes.
Gotcha.
You're building a spiritual pyramid. Dear Mr. Duralde and Mr. White, it's Julian from The Cinema Touch.
Done.
Again, the podcast is still brilliant. Quick question, what's wrong with Requiem for a Dream? Where to start?
How long you got?
It's histrionic. That's a good place to start.
It is two steps away from being an after-school special about drugs.
Tell young people what an after-school special is, Alonzo.
Oh, right, sorry.
Yeah.
In the 1970s, there was this thing called after-school specials that would pop up on network television on weekday afternoons, and they were aimed at, you know, tween and young teen viewers, often addressing social issues like alcoholism and drug addiction and abusive...
Divorce
and abusive
parenting. My dad lives in a downtown hotel was the name of one of them.
That's right.
Helen Hunt was in one about teens on PCP.
Was that? I don't know if that was an after-school special or just a TV movie.
It was an after-school special.
I'm not sure.
Pretty sure.
It was called Angel Dusted, if I recall.
My favorite one was Francesca Baby. Which is actually based on a book.
Right. There was another one called My Mom's Having a Baby, where they actually told you where babies come from.
Yeah, that was a good one.
And I think that Timer...
That's where I learned.
I think it was an animated bit that involved Timer, who on Saturday morning cartoons would show you how to make snacks out of cheese and crackers.
Yes.
But apparently he was also an expert in the human reproductive system. Anyway, Requiem for a Dream, like, okay, fine, yes, heroin is bad. We can all agree on that. But this movie is so histrionic in how it presents it. Not only is heroin bad, cocaine. Which is it? Is it cocaine?
All of them, I think.
Anyway,
right?
Drugs are bad. And not only are drugs bad, but if you use them, you will either wind up missing a foot or a limb on a chain gang or doing gross sex shows for Japanese businessmen.
Yes.
Or
hilarious.
Or completely sex shows losing your mind and thinking that your refrigerator is going to kill you.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so over the top and overdone and over everything. One of my favorite lines about it came from our friend John Powers, who wrote that Ellen Burstyn's performance is so bad in this movie, she will probably win an Academy Award. She did get nominated.
But back to Francesca Baby.
Oh.
Here's why it's my favorite one. It's about drunk parents. And it taught me things.
They had you at hello.
Yeah, it taught me things. They showed Francesca and her siblings making an escape plan for the house in case mom set the house on fire accidentally by getting drunk and smoking in bed and then setting everything on fire.
Like in Glitter.
Yeah. And I remember watching it thinking, okay, well, that's one thing that I can check off the list because we don't live in a two-story house. Like, I don't need a rope to get out the window if the house is on fire because my stepfather fell asleep with a cigarette in his hand.
Which he did a lot, by the way.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Our rug had burn holes in it from cigarettes that he would just drop on the rug after all passing out.
Oh, gosh. Your childhood stories really depress me.
But I remember thinking, okay, well, we don't live in a two-story house, so I can easily get out the window. Like, if everything's on fire, I can just get out the window. And so that was always the thing that I... And then it made me look up Alateen.
Oh, my.
But they didn't have any Alateen. Oh. Our town was too small to have an Alateen. And I remember thinking, all right, guess that's it.
There's no internet, so. Ouch.
But then I went and read the book. Uh-huh. So, yeah. I don't know if it was based on a book or if the book was a novelization of the after-school special or... I don't know.
But it was all there for you.
It was all there for me. It was my first exposure to...
Did you get it in the Scholastic Book Club?
No, it was a library.
Oh, okay.
I know. It was my first exposure to the idea that this wasn't just my family.
Oh, this is a thing that happens to other people, too.
Yeah, this is a thing that other people have to deal with, too. So it was really great because I was thinking, oh, okay. So it's not like, you know, when it's only happening to you, you're thinking, what did I do? Like, what did I do wrong? Why is this my life?
God,
but then you're like, then you see, the TV teaches you a thing. It teaches you, oh yeah, that's out in the world. Like, that's a thing in the world. You're not, that it's been happening to millions of people before you for thousands of years. It's going to keep happening to everybody else and also to you. But, you know,
so basically,
some
you're not so special.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. So those are all the letters. Let's sell things.
Let's sell things and give things away. Okay, first the selling. Again, my book, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas. It's on sale in all kinds of places, but if you want to get an autographed, personalized copy, and you want little extra doodads and gewgaws and hee-haws that we're throwing in...
Why are you calling... No. You're selling it wrong.
All right, then you do it.
Treats. None of which are a doodad, a gewgaw, or a hee-haw.
Okay, fine.
Treats. Exciting things.
Cool
thing.
Extras.
Cool extras physically placed inside this book, which is then gift wrapped for you. You get more for your money with this copy. It's going to cost you more. It's going to cost you the full retail amount, $17 plus $3 shipping and handling.
Costs a little more, but for a breath deodorant,
yes,
it's worth it.
Totally worth it.
So, okay, yeah. So, if you want to, you can get that directly from us. And again, it's $20 for shipping within the United States. If you need more than that, if you live somewhere else, let us know and we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
But you can PayPal us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. You can also PayPal.
And the ones that have recently been purchased are on your
way. On their way out. They're on their way. They're going to go out before Thanksgiving.
Some of them have already gone out.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then also you can PayPal $20 to linoleumpodcast@gmail.com to get one of our awesome T-shirts. They are a Hanes black with white lettering, beefy tee, 100% cotton. We are almost out of...
Ask us about sizes first.
Ask us about sizes, but we've got...
And it's not the sizes you think either. We have a lot of small people listening to us, all you mediums and you larges out there. You've sucked up all the sizes.
Yes. So,
but there's some smalls and there's some XLs and some double XLs.
Right. So let us know what you're looking for and we will try and get you taken care of and we will do our best to get it to you.
But there might be one or two medium or larges left.
Now, if you want to get this stuff before Christmas, obviously it behooves you to order as quickly as possible.
Yes.
So make that happen.
We're slow.
Yeah. Also, you can order for $1.99 each. Our wonderful Linoleum Knife presents more Linoleum Knife extra episodes. We have literally just moments ago recorded our latest one.
We've been talking all day.
For the 1959 movie Santa Claus. It is now available. You can get it from us, and it's a lot of fun, I think. And then you can also go back and get our previous catalog titles, White Christmas, Clue, Two for the Road, The Apple, and Josie and the Pussycats. All of those are $1.99 each. Just make sure you include the email address where you want those sent.
Yes.
If you're ordering a T-shirt, make sure you tell us what size you want and what where you want it sent. And if you're ordering a book, tell us how you want it to be signed and where you want it to be sent. If you're giving it as a gift, we're happy to ship it directly to the recipient, or we can send it back to you and you can hand it off, you know, however you want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And now that you have listened to our advertisements...
Well, there's other stuff that they need to do. They need to go like a lot of things on
Facebook. Oh, absolutely. Yes, yes, yes. Go like our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast.
Yes.
Go join the Linoleum Knife group page, where our listeners have conversations with each other about movie stuff, and we occasionally pipe in ourselves.
We do not run that page. That page is run by listener Gabe,
who is the admin.
Yes.
And then also go and join our YouTube page. I've been going and converting our old episodes into YouTube files.
Yep.
So, you know, if it's easier for you to just hop onto YouTube than to try and download an episode or stream it, then there it is for you, or you can watch it on your,
and you
your
just downloaded,
Apple TV or your Roku or whatever.
You just downloaded the infamous...
Dave Eats Potato Chips episode. We should maybe have a trigger warning on that one.
Eating noises happen.
But yeah, so we're up to episode...
Look, we were new to recording a podcast in that time, and I was very hungry that day.
It was our ninth episode back
in... I needed
in,
some chips, and I thought it would be funny to just... Or maybe I didn't even think it was funny. I thought maybe I just was hungry. And then I learned
that's that an actual phobia.
A lot of people have a phobia of hearing people
masticate,
crunch stuff on a microphone.
Yeah. So that was February 2011.
That is what happened.
We've grown so much since then as human beings and as broadcasters.
We have.
So go enjoy that. And then what's our giveaway, Dave?
I have some giveaway things. The first giveaway thing, there are three.
Okay.
There are three things to give away today. We were given, a while back, let me see what I got here. Is this a Blu-ray or a DVD?
I'm not sure.
Figure it out by looking at it. It's Apocalypse Now, The Complete Dossier, which includes the original version of Apocalypse Now.
It's a DVD.
And Apocalypse Now Redux. So both versions.
Yeah.
It is a DVD?
It is a DVD.
Okay, but it's a lovely little packaged box.
Yeah, it's got like an embossed envelope on the outside.
Yeah, and it's got tons of extras, both versions of the film.
Yeah, lots of commentaries, deleted scenes, never-before scenes, Marlon Brando outtakes... a study of the sound design and final mix. A lot of cool stuff.
Yeah. So if you are really into Apocalypse Now, or you've never seen it, and you want to be really into it, because you will be.
Yes.
When you watch it. We're going to do it the way we always do it. An essay writing contest. Now, I know in the past that I have limited this to 25 words or less. And that's a little bit of words. That's not much words. Tiny amounts of words.
Right.
I'm keeping the rules the way they are. 25 words or less.
Fine. And do not post it on either of our Facebook walls.
Yeah, you got to email us directly at...
linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Yes.
Don't post it on a thing because we won't see it. Maybe.
Don't tweet it
We could miss it. Anything could happen. Facebook, as you know... eats stuff.
Yes.
And hides things from people.
It's got to be an email.
Email is old-fashioned. It's what they had in the olden times, and it's what we still want to use today.
Yes. So you can write us a 25-word essay about why you should be the lucky
winner. Why do you love war? That's the subject of your essay.
Okay, fine.
Why do you love war? Why is war so great? Not why you want this DVD.
Okay.
Not why you deserve a thing.
Why is war great?
Why is war so great?
You're bizarre. All right, fine. So that's item number one.
Item number two. Again, essay contest. 25 words or less. We're making you work. You always have to work.
Yeah. We're not just drawing names out of a hat here, people.
This is... What is this?
It's a talking...
Does it really talk?
Apparently, well, I didn't take it out of the box, but it says it does.
It says it talks.
It's a talking Birdman.
It's from the movie Birdman.
Not from the television show Birdman.
No.
Or from Harvey Birdman.
Or Harvey Birdman, attorney at law. It says authentic voice on the front, but it doesn't say how to make it talk. And I wonder if it does, in fact, talk.
Well, in any case, it's a handsome Birdman figurine.
It's about 7 inches tall.
That may or may not actually talk.
And it's hard cast. It's not, like, cheap. It's heavy and sturdy and really detailed, and it's Michael Keaton in the Birdman costume.
Yeah.
And they sent it to us. The studio sent it to us. And you send us 24 words or less.
On...
What is your favorite bird? And why?
Okay. And what's the third thing?
Poster.
That's in a poster tube of...
It's a poster. It is a limited edition... This is probably the most valuable thing of the entire... This is also Birdman related. It is a limited edition Birdman poster print.
Is this like Shepard Fury or something? Or?
78. Number 78 out of 200. Mm-hmm. So they made 200 of these. I'm taking it out of the tube right now to see if I can tell anything more about it. It does not say who designed it, but it's a very sort of graphic representation.
We have a guy standing on the H in the Hollywood sign.
Of the poster. It's beautiful. It's actually kind of lovely. It's blue and pretty and, you know, striking blocks of color.
Yeah, yeah. If you are somebody who...
78 of 200.
If you're a fan of film posters, it's the kind of thing you might even want to frame or something.
Maybe, yes. Maybe you would like to frame it.
Yeah.
This is another essay contest.
And what is the 25 words or less on?
I don't know. What should they have to write about?
What's your favorite movie poster? I don't know.
No, that's boring.
Oh, well, excuse me. It's no, what's your favorite bird? This was your big idea.
I know it was. Hang on, I'm thinking. I'm thinking on my feet.
Yeah, and you're doing a swell job.
25 words or less on why I'm so great. What's your favorite thing is about me, Dave White?
25 words is more than they'll need, I would imagine, but okay.
Look, I said or less. It could be 3 words. This is the season of me getting gifts. And it's time for the listeners to gift me
with
words of praise. Uh-huh. So what is your favorite thing about me? And whoever I like the best in this will get this poster.
You can enter for all 3 of these if you like.
You can. One person can get all 3 if you write 3 amazing essays about each subject. Why you like war, what's your favorite bird, and what is my most shining personal characteristic.
Send all of those essays to linoleumpodcast.
This can be personality based or about my sexy body. maybe you're warm for my form.
You have a sexy body for radio.
No, I have a sexy body. Just in general. I'm robust.
I am not yes-anding you in this. Okay. Shall we press
on? You've been yes-anding me for 19 years.
Exactly. That's why I'm not doing
it
now.
You married this.
I know. All right. As always, we thank you for listening. By all means, go check out our friends on the internet. Go to ChristyLemire.com.
That was not an eating noise. That was a drinking water noise.
Check out the Rotten Tomatoes podcast with Matt Atchity and Gray Drake. Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley. The Schmoes Know. The B-Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney. I'm going to be on Dennis Anyone, actually, pretty soon. Because, oh, the other thing that we need to tell you about.
What?
If you are in the Los Angeles area, yes, on December 3rd,
oh, yeah.
Frank DeCaro and I are hosting a movie, Little Christmas in Tinseltown, as part of the Outfest West Hollywood series. We're going to be talking about our favorite Christmas movies and Christmas TV specials, and we have special guests, including Bruce Vilanch, who is one of the writers of the Star Wars holiday special, and Richard LeGravenaise, who wrote The Ref, and Cam Clark, who is the gay cousin of the King family. And if you don't know what the King family Christmas is all about, Google it. It will blow your mind. So very excited about that. Tickets are on sale at outfest.org. If you're in town, please come. Frank and I will be autographing copies of our books afterwards. So if you're local and you want to get a copy of my book and didn't feel like paying the extra $3 for postage, come to the Outfest thing and I'll sign one for you there. Also check out Fat Guys of the Movies, the Brett Easton Ellis podcast, the Criterion cast, Film Spotting SVU, Pod Crash, the Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. We want to thank Blue, as always, for our wonderful theme music. You can find him online at Bluetopia.com. Subscribe to the show at iTunes and leave us a good review there. It does help people find the show. If you've already written one, thank you. And if you haven't done it yet, please do. It really helps us a lot. You can stream the show at Stitcher Radio or TheLounge.com, and you can give us a little thumbs up or other ratings there. Or you can stream the show on the app on our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast, which, as we mentioned, it would be great if you went and liked it if you haven't already. You can follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. You can check into the the show at getglue.com. And once again, our email address is linoleumpodcast@gmail.com for any questions, comments, top 10 lists. And that's also where you can PayPal us for all the good stuff we're selling you. So please do, and please take advantage of ordering early if there's any of the stuff that you want to get in time for Christmas. Mm-hmm. So have a great Thanksgiving, everybody, and we will see you guys next time.
Goodbye.